Good morning, Alan Alcoholic. Can you hear in the back? All right. Jim A. pointed out to me he couldn't hear me last month. So I'm back. And Johnny really stroked my ego when he called me right before Christmas. And, you know, last month I said, when I didn't get all the way through my story, I said, you know, I hope that I get a chance to come back and finish it. And I just thought it would be like next year sometime. And when Johnny called right before Christmas and said, you want to share your second part of your story? I said, sure. And he goes, can you do it January 4th? I'm like, whoa. You know, but I kind of took it as this. And it was kind of like an encore, right? Right? That's my ego. My ego was really going right away. So how many weren't here in December for part one? Ooh. All right. Damon has tapes, and it's on his website, wejoy.org. I don't want to go back through that all. You know, when we get here on the podium, I'm going to try to stay behind the podium as much as possible today. I'm not a big podium guy. I always think that people up here always kind of look kind of like in charge, and I like not being in charge anymore. But I'm going to try to stay here. But just to kind of give you a synopsis of last time, I'm told to tell in a general way what it was like, what happened, and what it's like today, right? That's what we're supposed to do up here. Part one was what it was like, you know, what got me here. I kind of took people through the obsession of the mind of myself and my drinking career, and I took you guys on a ride to my first meeting. Remember that, those that you were here? My first meeting was extremely spiritual. It isn't like that for everybody, but it was for me. And I took everyone through the journey of me meeting my sponsor, the sponsor that I call my sponsor still today. His name is Patrick B. He's from Minneapolis, Minnesota. That's where I was up until about 4 years ago. So that's where we started, or that's where we ended, and that's where we're going to start today. And we go by the book. You know, most of you know that frequent breakfast club, I go right out of the book. I can't make stuff up anymore. I made up stuff for a long, long time. I used to read the newspaper by the pictures. Anybody else? I would flip through the morning paper, I'd see the pictures, and then I'd be at coffee or I'd go to work and somebody'd say, hey, did you see that happen in the world yesterday? You know, and I said, yeah, I saw that in the paper today. And I'd tell the story, not knowing anything but just the picture. And so I have to go by the book, guys. And so today, the beginning of this, probably for the first 30 minutes, is going to be kind of like a big book study, okay? My big book study. I'm going to take you right from where Patrick took me. We're probably going to go up to page probably 85. I always tell the guys that I get the privilege to work with that, you know, when we get to page 45, it says what the book is for. You know, this book is to enable you to find a power greater in yourself. You know that thing. Come on. This is interactive too. And then on page 85, it's gone. Has anybody ever told you that? 40 pages. Remember that 40 days, 40 nights thing? 40 pages from 45 to 85, our problems are gone. Patrick pointed that out to me. You know, some people say you got to go 164 pages, and that kind of scared me because I read the first 10 pages of most books and put it down. You know, anybody else like that? All right. So where we left off was what saved my life. If everybody remembers, I asked a guy to sponsor me about 2 weeks in these rooms, and the guy told me to turn to page 112 and read the first three words and do what it says. And Tim, you remember what those words were? Read this book. It's very dangerous. Don't do it. I wouldn't suggest it. And that also brings me to another thing before I really get started. Everything you hear is my story. We all have our own stories, and we all have our own sponsors that take us through this a different way. Mine took me exactly how the first 100. You know, when it says at the very beginning of this thing on title page, this is precisely, or somewhere in one of the forwards, it says, this is precisely how we've recovered. That caught my attention. when Patrick read that to me, that caught my attention. And so I said, if they can do it, I can do it. And if they did it by the book, I'm going to do it by the book. We ended on the forward of the second edition, if you guys remember that. Those people here that remember that, you know, when he read that sentence backwards. Remember me reading that sentence backwards to you? I'm going to read it back to you again, okay? Because when that guy told me to go to 112, read the first three words, read this book and do what it says, I immediately took that and understood that is, this is a do-it-yourself program. For 2 years, I walked around doing it myself. Then when Patrick and I sat down, he started at the title page, because when it was do-it-yourself, where did I start? Page one, right? That's where you start. Some of the best stuff in this book is in the preface, the forewords of the editions, doctor's opinion. I skipped that too. Can you believe that? Do it yourself or I missed the doctor's opinion by myself. I went to page one. So he got to page 16 and 17, Roman numeral 16 and 17. Let me remind everybody that was here what that said. It said this seemed to prove that one alcoholic could affect another as no non-alcoholic could. It also indicated that strenuous work, one alcoholic with another, was vital to permanent recovery. Now, Patrick ain't the smartest person in the world, but he did something right there that changed my life. He said, I'm going to read that sentence backwards to you. And I had already defined recovered for him. I told him that recovered was to return to a normal state of mind and body. He had me looking up all kinds of words. Okay, I don't know if your sponsor does. But, you know, he'd ask me what a word means, and I'd kind of start him-hawing around. He'd said, just shut up. The correct answer is, I don't know. Okay? And then he'd have me look it up. Well, I didn't know what recovered meant, but when I looked it up, and I have my guys look it up, and I have them ask or tell me what it meant. And meant to me is to return to a normal state of mind and body. So when he got to this point, he said, okay, you told me you wanted to return to a normal state of mind and body, right? Right. He goes, do you want that on a permanent basis? I said, yeah, I do. And he kept on reading that sentence backwards, and you can do it yourself today. Then it's vital to work with another alcoholic doing strenuous work. And he pointed out to me that Bill didn't mean strenuous as hard work. He meant it as vigorous work, getting after it kind of work. And he goes, do you think you can do that? Can you work with me doing strenuous work? I said, yes. And there was a lot of yes-no questions through this first part, you know, and this is going to be redundant. For this first, before we get through, there is a solution and more about alcoholism. And really, even when we get into my fourth step, it's a lot of yes-no questions. But that's what I got out of the forward of the second edition. And I didn't see that on do-it-yourselfer. Okay? He turned to the doctor's opinion. You know, I've been in the rooms, remember, for nearly 2 years, dying. Okay? And I like to tell people is that, you know, that old saying in the rooms, you spot it, you got it. Anybody ever heard of that? You spot it, you got it. Okay, I can spot those guys that are pretty much dying because I was one of those guys. Okay, I walked around here as a dry drunk for nearly 2 years dying in front of your eyes. And I was going to 11 meetings a week, guys. 11 meetings a week. You know that old saying, meeting makers make it? I'm proof that you almost don't. Because remember that rubber hose that was around my neck? Remember that? I was nearly 2 years sober when that hose was around my neck. I was around dry drunk. So what this whole story today is this is not a do-it-yourself program. You can spectate all you want and all the meetings you want, but if you don't participate in this program and get into this book, you might end up in a situation like me, or that's my experience. One of the other things he talked about in the forward of second edition is he pointed to these. He pointed to the wall. And I've heard it a couple other times in these rooms that Patrick pointed out to me that these are guidelines. This isn't how we go through the program. This is our guidelines. So tell us where we're at in our recovery. And he always used to say to me, and he still does every once in a while, he says, make sure you don't sponsor off the wall because you might get off the wall experiences. Does that make sense to you guys? You know, those guys that never dig in the book, never get a sponsor, and they go, oh, you know what? I'm powerless over alcohol in my life of becoming, and they go through the wall, and then they come in and they're crazy some days off that wall experience. That's what I was doing when I was doing it yourself, because that's what I was told. When we got to the doctor's opinion, he pointed out the allergy like I'd never heard before. You know, I now read that doctor's opinion with my guys, and you can see the light bulb go on when they go, wow, I get it. I get that allergy. I get that allergy. You know, I used to say to Patrick, you know, the one guy that made a difference in my first meeting was Rich. Remember that Rich? You remember Rich in my first meeting when he said, when I drink, I get thirsty, and the more I drink, the thirstier I get? Patrick said, does that make sense to you now? It does. You have an allergy. Once you take that first drink, you can't get enough. The craving sets in, it goes. So in the doctor's opinion, you know, I got it. I got it through the doctor's opinion. I also liked the part as far as in doctor's opinion, right at the very end, when it said about sold. You guys know that part where it says, however, he did become sold on the ideas contained in this book. You know that word sold? That's an old Iowa word. My dad used it a lot. You know, when somebody sold on the idea, they bought into it. And I bought into it hook, line, and sinker that day. I still remember when Patrick read the doctor's opinion to me, and I'm like, I get that allergy. I definitely have that allergy. All right? And he flipped the page to Bill's story. Now, Bill's story is very unique. When I first got out of college, I was in the investment industry. I owned an investment firm. I was with American Express to start out with. And I got in the industry about the same time Bill did years later. And what I mean by that is that Bill got into it right before the Great Depression, right? The big stock market crash of 29, right? Okay. I got in it in July of 1987. Anybody around in October of 87? I was too. Yeah. Great stock market crash of 1987. I had a lot in common with Bill's story. When I read it alone, I didn't read all that stuff. I didn't hear about the boomerang. You know? I didn't... That alloy that would come around and turn to bits, I didn't hear that. The quicksand. Remember when he talks about his surrender and how he's sinking in quicksand? I didn't hear that when I was reading it by myself, but when Patrick read it and read all those words to me, I got it. The biggest thing I got out of Bill's story, though, was that shot in, or that catapulted into the fourth dimension. You know, that's in the same paragraph that is surrender, that he's talking about the quicksand. He turns around and he says, soon I was to be catapulted. And you're going to see that. This doesn't take very long with Patrick and I. This takes a matter of about 3 months with Patrick and I for me to be catapulted. Okay? And I'm already feeling it when we're in Bill's story. I can feel that catapult. I can start to feel that hope. And that's really what I got out of Bill's story. When I work with others with Bill's story, I have them pick out the similarities. It wasn't hard for me because I was in the same industry as Bill. So it was real easy for me to pick out similarities. For other guys, it's a little bit more difficult. But I really encourage people to find the similarities to Bill. Okay, and I find that it gives them hope. We get into, there is a solution, you know, there's a solution. We talk about, you know, the two options. You know, at that particular time, you know, Patrick's really getting into my ego. He is really good about ego deflation. I know that a couple people in here have talked to Patrick on the phone, and he's real good at that ego deflation. And by this time, he's really doing that to me. And when we got to the bitter end or accept spiritual help, and he's asking me, what's my choice to be? He asked the yes, no. I said, I want spiritual help. And we moved on. We got into more about alcoholism, and that's when he started the program. You know, I thought the first step was we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, our lives had become unmanageable. You know, no one had to tell me I was powerless over alcohol, but I needed somebody to turn to page 30 and tell me what the first step of recovery was, and Patrick did. You know, Patrick said, you know, the idea that someday he will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. I could relate by that time. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death, and that wasn't hard for me to grasp because just a few months earlier I had that hose around my neck, right? I was headed that way. You know, I wouldn't suggest that for anybody. But then he said, we learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we are alcoholics. This is key. This is the first step in recovery. He didn't say this is we're powerless over alcohol and our lives have become unmanageable. He said the first step in recovery was the delusion that we're like other people or presently maybe had to be smashed. great. Did you hear that? She smashed. That was awesome. Good timing. And I didn't know that reading this book by myself. I didn't know that was the first step in recovery. And he helped me understand that I wasn't like those people. You know, the people that I ran around that could have a few beers or a couple of drinks and leave them sitting there. I always tell the story that I had a working relationship with an accountant that was right around the corner from me. I had an office on Main Street in a small town, and he had his office. And his clients were my clients, and my clients were his. And we went back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And most nights we'd end the night with, getting together at one office or the other, and we'd have drinks. And when I went to go make amends, and you won't hear him back in the amends part, but I'll tell you this now so I can tell you another story, but I got together with Brad to make amends 2 years down road of all this. And it was really funny because Brad and I seemingly drank the same, like each other. And that morning when we got together, I was telling him, you know, I'm in the program recovery and I kind of was starting to do my amends. And he stopped cold and he kind of came across the table and he says, "Alan, do you think I'm alcoholic?" Yeah, Brad said that. He goes, "You think I'm alcoholic?" I said, "Brad, why would I think you're alcoholic?" He goes, "Well, because we drank together." And I said, "Brad, let me ask you this. Is that when we got done drinking at our offices, what'd you do?" He goes, "I went home and went to bed." I said, "Well, you think Alan did? Went home, went to bed." I said, "No, I went home and continued to drink until I passed out, until I went to oblivion." That's a big difference between you and me, Brad, is you know you have a sense of control with your drinking. "But we drank all the time together," he'd say. "But do you remember I would drink 2 to year 1, 3 to year 1? You'd go home to your wife. I'd stay where we were." You know? And so Patrick started pointing those things out to me. He smashed home the idea that I wasn't like other people. And that's what I got out of More About Alcoholism. More About Alcoholism, I also, you know, I love the stories of Jim, the jaywalker, and Fred. You know, we just read, I was the leader on the trusted servant on January 1st, and we read the story of Jim or Fred. I can't remember which one. I relate to those guys. Whenever I really think that I need a little ego deflation or a little attitude adjustment, I go back to those stories. You know, the jaywalker one. I like jaywalker one because, you know what, I was like that. I drank at 4 o'clock every afternoon, knowing what was going to happen, just like that jaywalker running out in front of the car and boom, breaking his leg. He goes back and does it the next day. I was just like that. So More About Alcoholism really taught me that I wasn't like those normies out there. When we got to We Agnostics, it is the most marked up part of my book. You know, one of the things that he tried to drill home to me is that my ideas weren't working. You know, and he drilled home that, you know, the first part of it is that we could wish to be moral. We could wish to be philosophically comforted. In fact, we could wish, we could will these things with all our might, but the needed power wasn't there. You know, I just couldn't do it. And when he read on page 45, this is exactly what this book is about. The main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem. He got my attention again. Because I was like, that sounds pretty good. And when I read that, I didn't hear the words. And he said that we're going to talk about God. And right then he asked me, what's the God of my understanding? And, you know, I always say I'm a happy Catholic. You know, I always was. I went to Catholic grade school. I went to Catholic college. You know, I'm a happy Catholic. And I know God, right? My God of my understanding, Patrick said, what's the God of your understanding? I said, well, the God of my understanding is this guy up in the clouds in the white gown with the white hat, with the white staff, with the white beard. And you know that one. You know, he's at the top of the stairs. But mine had a chalkboard. It had Alan at the top, and it had good on one side and bad on the other. And he had a piece of chalk, and he was doing chicken scratches of all the goods that I did and keeping track of all the bads I did. And at the day of my reckoning, I thought that, you know what, if I had more goods... You know, I'm telling Patrick this. If I had more goods, I got to go up the stairs. If I had more bads, that guy was going to come from down below, that devil, and take me down, and I was just going to be in the dungeon for the rest of my life. And just like a good Catholic, we believe in that place in between, that purgatory place. If they were about even, you poor souls would have to pray for me to get me up to the heaven. And so I believe that because Sister Zoe told me that. Father Beeson told me that. My mother told me that. And it was okay. It was okay. And Patrick let it go with that. You know, he went through it and he said, you know, your own conception, you know, I love that. Your own conception, however inadequate, was sufficient to make approach. He was okay with that. But he did one really cool thing, and I used to bring it when I tell my story, but it's so dilapidated now, it's falling apart. But anybody in here in sales? Anybody know the Ben Franklin? Okay, the Ben Franklin in sales is you do pros and cons. When you're selling your product, you go through the pros and cons, and if there's more pros, the person buys it. Cons, you know, you didn't do your job. And Patrick did this to me. He tricked me. He knew that I needed to lay aside my old ideas of God if I was going to recover. My old guy ideas didn't work. I had to have a new one. He tricked me. And he had me take out a piece of paper and make a little T. And on the one side, he said, I want you to write at the top what your God is not. I wrote those words, what your God is not. And then he said, I want you in simple and understandable terms, which is typically one word kind of things. I want you to tell me what your God is not. And I wrote things like lustful. He's not mean. He's not, you know, he doesn't judge. What else did I say? He's not angry. And then on the other side, he said, when I was done, he said, okay, I want you to put on the other side of that T, I want you to put the opposite, a word that means the opposite. And so like next to lustful, I said loving. Next to angry, I put caring. Next to judgmental, I put forgiving. Next to dishonest, I put honest. Then he had me folded over and he said, you never have to look at that other side again. And he said, I want you to write on the top, my God is. And I want you to read that back to me, Alan. So I read back to him, my God is loving, caring, honest, and forgiving. And Patrick goes, sounds like a pretty cool God to me. Think you can take that the rest of the way? And I did. And I get tears still today because when I was on my way home that night, you know, I told you I met him in a reading room in downtown Minneapolis, and my place was out on the border between Wisconsin and Minnesota on the river, about 52 miles between those two spots. So I had a lot of time to think, and I go right by 3M's world headquarters, and I remember that because it was exactly there that this happened. By this time, Patrick had me doing little things like, you know, following the rules. One of the rules was I had to go 55 miles an hour. So I was in the middle lane of a three-lane freeway. Cars are zipping by me, right? You guys can vision that? And I start playing this game. I'm waving at him, and nobody's waving back. Anybody do that? I'm waving back. And I'm like, all of a sudden this thought came to my mind. Suddenly that thought, and it went, man, these people are obviously aware of you because they're not hitting you. They're not running into you, but they're completely ignoring you or evading you. Picked up my phone, and I got to tell you, I think I told you this last time, but, you know, Patrick has a weird way of telling me at this time that I'm on to something. He either tells me to go F myself or he hangs up on me. And I wish he was here. He's on his way here. He's in Jacksonville today. He would tell you that is exactly true. I picked up the phone and I called Patrick and I said, I know you're with someone. I only need a minute. He goes, you only have a minute. And I said, I'm driving and these cars, they're zipping by me. I'm going the speed limit and they're obviously aware of me, but they're completely ignoring me or evading me. Could it be possible, Patrick, that I've been aware of that loving and caring, honest and forgiving God all this time? I just chose to ignore or evade him. He goes, go F yourself, and hung up on me. And I started to bawl like a little baby. I bawled all the way home, and I walked out to my dock at the river. And I said some crazy things that night. Didn't know it, but I was doing a third step. Didn't know it. Didn't even know it. I said things like, you know, take all of me. Take away everything I got, you know. Make me an instrument. You know, it was kind of like the St. Francis, good Catholic, you know. And I called Patrick later that night and told him what had happened. And he said, I think it's time to turn the page. I think you have a God of your understanding, and that's enough for right now. Do you believe that God is everything? And I said, yeah. And again, the yes, no questions. He checked it off. He didn't let me go to the next step until I got through that next step. So I had that loving and caring God. And we took that right into the fourth step. And I need to tell you this story about the do-it-yourselfer step. I got to the fourth step doing it yourself this way. Anybody else get sponsored by Joe and Charlie? You know what that means? You know the Joe and Charlie tapes? Okay, I thought it was a really cool idea to have them sponsor me when I was doing it yourself. Okay, which isn't bad because they're pretty good. Okay, but I kind of skipped over the guidelines of 1, 2, and 3 when I went to 4 because I thought that was important because everybody here tells you it's important and all that stuff. And so I went to 4 and I got the worksheets. And one Saturday, you guys, I had this round game table in my house and I got a boombox. You younger ones don't know what a boombox is, but it's kind of a radio with a cassette and CD. And I put the 4-step CD in it. I had my big book. I had these worksheets that Joe and Charlie ask you to use. And I hit the button and I start in. And I start doing what they say for me to do. And I got through 3 or 4 pages of my resentments, and I literally got up and went in the restroom and violently got ill. And I told Patrick that story. And he said, you didn't have the God of your understanding to help you get through that 4-step. And I have one now with Patrick, right? I have that loving, caring, honest, and forgiving God, right? And so we start in on our 4-step. And I didn't have any worksheets. We had a legal pad. He asked me to bring a legal pad. And the only thing we didn't do that's not in the book is that he had me put a prayer at the top of each page of my resentments, fears, and harms, okay, or sexual harms. And that was a set-aside prayer. He introduced me to all kinds of prayers, and you guys know it by now, is that I kind of am big into prayer. It works. It really does. And the prayer that he had me do was a set-aside prayer. God, let me set aside everything I think I know about you or sobriety, life, and you so that I may be open to a new experience. And I started seeing myself go through that 4-step with no problems whatsoever. You know, I did the first column, and he introduced me to that 4-step because I get caught up on some of that those people in the first step or first column, you know, those people that were angry. I'd get stuck on them. And he'd go, here's a prayer for you. And it's right out of the book. You know, God, I am angry at Lois. Lois is a sick person. How may I be helpful to Lois? Keep me from being angry at Lois. Thy will be done. I must have said that 1,000 times during that 4-step. And it helped me get through it because I had a God that was loving and caring, honest and forgiving that was taking me through it. Okay? And we got all the way through that 4-step. And we got into the 5th step. And the 5th step, when everything starts to happen, people, and we've got about 15 minutes, and it's perfect timing because the 5th step changed everything. I did my 5th step with my sponsor, and he had the list, right? He had the list, and we started talking about the exact natures. We didn't go through each individual thing. I thought that he was going to go through all 18 pages of resentments and all 22 pages of fears and all the... I thought that's how we were going to do it, and he didn't do that. He went right down to that 4th column where it said an exact natures. And I had things... I had dishonesty all over my list. All over it. And couple things about that 5th step that are very, very important. If you don't think this changes lives, listen to the next 5 minutes. He's zipping through my list, and we've been talking for about an hour, hour and a half. You can see this puzzled look on Patrick's face, and Patrick said, do you have a dad? That's a dumb question. Dumb question. You know, right? Yeah, I've got a dad, Patrick. I said, why do you ask? Patrick says, well, he's nowhere on this list. I've never seen that. I've sponsored hundreds of men, and I've never seen anyone come in to me that doesn't have their dad. Tell me a story about your dad. And I said, well, my dad was John Deere dealer. I went to work with him. We were good friends. He was a great father. When I looked up into the stands at every athletic event I had, he was there. He was always there for me. We went hunting together. We loved pheasant hunting. Loved pheasant hunting. He says, well, is your dad still alive? And he said, no, We lost him about 2 years ago. He died when I was 6 months sober. Well, tell me about that. I said, he had Parkinson's. He had a couple of strokes, and my mom called me and said, you better come down to Des Moines. We don't know how long your dad's got. And I got on the phone. I was driving from Minneapolis to Des Moines on I-35, and I got on the phone, and I called one of my very best friends. John is his name. And John had lost his dad. We lost his dad a few years earlier to a coronary. John didn't have a chance to say goodbye to his dad, and his dad was his best friend, just like my dad was. And John and my dad had a very special relationship. My dad got him started in the banking business. After my dad sold his John Deere dealerships, he went to work for the bank that he had done business with for years, which tells you a little bit about him. He had integrity coming out of his pores. And anyway, John said, make me a promise, Alan. When you go see your dad, spend an hour or so for the next few days telling him how proud you are of him, all the things you learned from him, all the things that maybe you're not so proud of, some of the things that maybe you'd have done differently, and let him do the same for you. And I said, I'll promise you I'll do that, John. And I did that. God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself, you guys. I was 6 months sober, didn't have a clue what an amends was. And I was making amends to my dad right then and there. And when I did a four-step, he was nowhere to be found on it. Pretty cool deal. This thing changes lives. It works. It really does. The other thing about it is that we're 3 hours into my fifth step, and we're kind of getting to the end. And Patrick's like, is there anything else that you want to get off your chest? You know? And I said, I really don't think so, Patrick. And most unbelievable thing, I wish he was here this morning to share this with you, because it's a special time for him too, because it is just weird. He's flipping through the resentments, you guys, 18 pages of them, and he comes to a page that I had neatly hid one of my resentments, purposely hid. And he goes, who's this guy? Poof. And I go, who? And he goes, Kevin Marks. And I said, ooh. So Kevin Marks, I said, when I was a little boy, we used to have this thing called Hoodoo Days, Patrick. And it was like the July 4th for most little towns, you know, with the fireworks, the parades, the bingo at the fire hall, all that kind of stuff. And our parade, when we were little, they'd give you a couple carnival tickets if you decorate your bike or your wagon and take your pet in. And this one year, my mom and dad helped me decorate my bike. I had one of those with a banana seat with the big handlebars. Used to put the playing cards on the front, you know, to make it sound like a motorcycle. I had one of those bikes, and it looked sweet. It was green, yellow, and white, you know, John Deere colors. You know, it was just awesome. And so before the parade, I thought I'd run around town. And I lived in a little town of 1,000 people, so you could imagine the size of this place. It's probably 10 blocks by 20 blocks, you know. So I'm going to ride around. And when I came out of my alley, there's a guy at the bottom of my alley. His name is Kevin Marks, and we're told to stay away from this guy. But he stopped me, and he said, Alan, can I have a ride on your bike? I said, where are you going? He goes, I got a fort. And I said, sure, jump on. Where's your fort? It's downtown. I said, where at? And he says, that old burned-out building. Oh, my parents say we can't go in that burned-out building. Oh, no, you can. You know, and he goes, you want to see my fort? And I said, well, okay. And so we get in there, and there's all these tall weeds, and the ceiling is all gone. The sun's coming through, and he's got a little trail back in the back, and he's got this refrigerator boxes and washer and dryer boxes that are kind of stacked up like a fort. And next thing I know, I have a knife next to my throat, and he said, if you tell anybody, I'll kill you. Now, Patrick wasn't my friend at this time, and he made that very well known, but it's the first time I ever saw him have an eye of compassion for me. And he looked right at me, and he said, I'm really sorry about that, Alan. And a tear ran down his face. And he said, that shouldn't happen to a little boy like you. And I'm really sorry that happened. But he said, it explains a lot in this four-step. I told you I had a lot of dishonesty, right? I had a lot of dishonesty by omission, which means I didn't want you to know what I didn't know, or I didn't want you to know something about me. And I got that because somebody had a big old cold stone steel freaking knife to my throat saying, I'll kill you if you tell anybody. And he said, no one will blame you. But does this start to connect the dots for you, Alan? And it did. It did. It started connecting the dots. This thing works. It really does. If you guys think a fifth step is just a bunch of just hee-haw talk, it isn't. It changed my life. I'm not a victim. I'm a volunteer now. That's the one thing that I started to see in my fourth and fifth step. No longer a victim in this world, but I'm a volunteer because my stories will help you. My stories will help you. And that's how I went on. And he told me to go home that night and rest for an hour and to call him. And I did. I called him and after an hour and he said, "Well, we're at step six, Alan." And he said, "I need you to turn to page 75. And I did. And he said, "You know, when I read these things to you, I want you to be looking at page 59. And we're going to go over the first five guidelines." And he said, "You know, do you see the powerless in alcohol you had?" "Yes." And he went through it. And he went through the questions. "Is our work solid so far? Are the stones properly in place?" And he asked me all kinds of questions about the first five guidelines. He said, "Did you do a thorough fourth step? Do you think everything's on there? Did we share everything in the fifth step that you needed to be shared?" And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Then turn the page." And he went right through it. He read the next, you know, three paragraphs to me, and we were on our way. He said, "If we can answer to our satisfaction to those questions, then we look at step six. We have emphasized the willingness to be indispensable. We are now ready to let God remove from us all the things that we have admitted are objectionable. Can He now take them all, everyone?" And he said the best thing: "If we cling on to something, we will not let go. We ask God to help us be willing." And he said, "Alan, there's some things that you're going to hang on to. It's not going to change overnight. I was a procrastinator. Why do today what I can do tomorrow?" Anybody else? Yeah. "I was one of those guys, and I really enjoyed it. I'm not like that anymore." And then he got to the seventh step prayer, and he said, "I'm going to read this prayer to you. I want you to follow along to it." And he said, "My Creator, I'm now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen." And Patrick said, "Do you know what amen means?" And I said, "I don't know." I was pretty trained pretty good by then. And he said, "That in Hebrew means I believe." So he read that over to me, and then he said, "Amen again." And he said, "Do you believe?" And I said, "I do." And if you went through the first, second, third, fourth, and fifth step with me out of the book like I did, you would believe. For him to be able to say Kevin Marks, for him to realize my dad's nowhere in that, there's countless other ones, guys, but I just picked two of them because we're short on time. So then we started in on my list of harms. And you know, how many of you got lists, the harms were this long, right? Okay, we had lots of harms. We had lots of amends to be made. And so he made it easy. You know, how many of you guys did the three columns? You know, you had so many, you had to do three columns. Me too. You know, the first column is, you know, hey, I can make this amend right away. Column two, hey, those guys did as much to me as I did to them, so screw them. You know that deal? You know? And then those ones over here, I'm never going to do. Taking them to the grave. Guess who was at the top of that one? My mom. Person that gave me life was at the top of that list. So again, you guys are starting to see Patrick's pretty sneaky, right? Okay. So I get done with that list, and we're just about ready to make amends, and it's a Thursday night. And he said, "Which amends do you want to start with?" I said, "I don't know. Why don't you go home and think about it? And I'll see you next Thursday." I said, "Well, I got something to tell you. I can't come on Thursday night." Remember when we met, he said, "I never get to miss one," right? I hadn't missed a Thursday night up to this point in time. And it's about 3 months into this deal and into this relationship. And I said, "I can't be here next Thursday. I'm going to be driving to Texas to see my son play hockey." And he says, "Okay, it's time for us to switch. I'll make it to Sunday. Can you be here at Sunday at 7 a.m? I said, "Sure." "Okay, we're going to discuss your amends." And remember, he's tricky. He's really tricky. So I get there on Sunday morning, or actually, before I left that day, he says, "You know what? How do you get to Texas? Are you going to drive or fly?" And I said, "I'm going to drive." He says, "On your way to Texas, isn't that go through your hometown? How do you drive?" And I said, "I go right down I-35 and go right by my hometown." "Does your mom still live in your hometown?" "Yep." "Do you think she'd like to see her grandson play hockey?"
I said, maybe.
He goes, why don't you call her on your way home and then call me and see what happens. So I called my mom and said, hey, you know, at that particular time, I didn't have a very good relationship with my mom because I'd isolated from her, right? Okay? And so I called her and I said, Mom, I told her and I said, would you like to go to Texas with me to see Ryan play hockey? And she said, I'd love to. So I'm happy. I called Patrick, you're not going to believe this. And I'm just falling right into his trap, right? You know, I'm falling right into his trap. And I said, yeah, she wants you to go with me. He goes, I'll see you on Sunday. Now, the beautiful thing about it is he gave me on Sunday a three-step amends. And all of you guys do amends probably differently, but his way it was three steps. Number one, I was ordered. This is the way I was supposed to do it. Because everybody was, you know, I thought amends was sorry, sorry, sorry. He pointed out to me everybody was tired of sorry Al. Okay, so we were going to do it differently, and he had me define amends, and it meant to make things right, to put things right. Okay, and so here was the three steps. Number one, I was to tell them I was in a program of recovery and that I was working with someone that helped me establish that I had seen in my past that I've been dishonest, selfish, self-seeking, inconsiderate, and come up with one or two ways that I felt I had been that way in their lives. And then I was to turn to them in step two of my amends, and I was to say, how has my actions and behaviors affected you over the years? And I was instructed to stop and shut up. And I was not to speak, only to clarify if I didn't understand something they said, but I was not to speak until they were done. And then third, I was to turn to them and say, how do I make things right? So that Sunday, he said, hey, why don't we do this? Since you're going to be picking up your mom, why don't we try this on your mom? See how it goes. And if you don't think this works, listen to this. So I picked my mom up on a Tuesday. We drive to Emporia, Kansas. We stop in a Super 8 for Tuesday night. On Wednesday morning, I called Patrick to check in. He said, you're doing your amends this morning. You got 6.5 hours between Emporia, Kansas and Wichita Falls, Texas. I checked it, he said. That ought to give you enough time. So I said, okay. And I came off the entrance ramp onto the Kansas Turnpike, and I turned to my mom and turned off the radio, turned to my mom, and I said, Mom, I'm in a program of recovery, and I've been working with this guy named Patrick, and he's helped me identify dishonesty and all that kind of stuff. And a couple of the things that I've noticed is that in my life with you is that, you know, I've isolated from you. I just kind of put you out of my life over the last few years. And you know those silver dollars that were missing out of the safe at home? That was me. And I said, more importantly, I want to know how my actions and behaviors have affected you and my dad and my family over the years. And that started at 9 a.m., guys. And I pulled into the Holiday Inn Express west of Wichita Falls, Texas. You can look at it. Verify everything. Went through Oklahoma City to get a water. We stopped once for water and to go to the restroom. My mom started speaking and telling me how that tornado had gone through her life. And 6.5 hours later, when we pulled into that parking lot, she was done. 6.5 hours of her telling me what that tornado did in her life, the love of her life, in her children's lives and others' lives. And there was a lot of tears. And I turned off the car, or I didn't turn off the car because it was 103 degrees on the temperature gauge, but I put it in park and I turned to my mom. And 6.5 hours, right? 6.5 hours. How long did it take her to tell me how to make things right? How long? 15 seconds. This is exact words. I can hear him in my mind still. I said, Mom, how do I make things right? She said, I want to be a part of your life and a part of my grandchildren's lives again. And I want you to do this with your sisters. And I said, I think I can do that. Now, let's just tell you, that's my story. How is it today? I practice 10, 11, and 12 in my program on a daily basis. How does that show up? I have an incredible relationship with people like my mother. I go back to my mother's home in Osceola, Iowa every month, and I do that to-do list that my dad used to do. I do the honey-do list now, and it's fun. We pray together. When she needs something, she calls Alan. She doesn't call one of my sisters. That's pretty incredible from a guy that pretty much put their mother out of their lives. I have a loving and caring relationship with the love of my life, Diane. She couldn't be here today because her son is here. But Diane is a gift from God, and Diane and I met back in 1985, and I ripped her heart out in 1985 as a 21 or 22 year old, thought I was everything in the world guy, and she came back into my life 26 years later, and she was going through a divorce, and I'd been divorced forever, and today I serve that woman every single day. I get up with her at 5:30 in the morning, and for the next hour, she gets ready to go to work, and I make her breakfast, and I pack her treats for work, and she's everything, and I service that. And I really live by four things now. You know, what's it like today? You know, that old saying, love and tolerance is our code. That's my number one thing in this world. I wake up and remind myself, love and tolerance of others is my code. You know, I try to be of maximum service. Johnny said something about being something in his recovery. I try to be of maximum service to God and those about me. Second thing, you know. The third thing, I always am reminded, you know, God will provide what I need if I keep close to Him and do and perform His work well. And it really gets summed up by my fourth thing that I think about every day, and that is less Alan, more God. Less Alan, more God. This thing really does work. I appreciate you guys coming back. May the God of your understanding continue to bless you so that you continue to be a blessing to all of us. And with that, thank you.